Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you on this Tuesday, August the 18th, 2020, 17 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into WWGH Radio. Now, this hour is going to be a lot of fun because we have a guest on who I don't believe we've had on since April, and we are in the midst of the Democratic Convention, and politics as they are always interesting, and this is a gentleman's voice who you hear on this station quite a bit. A matter of fact, every Monday morning from 10 a.m. until 11 a.m. on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam Lepp. He is an historian, a professor, an author, and he's been coming on this show now for, I think, something like 3 or 4 years. So what a pleasure it is to welcome back to these microphones Dr. Ron Fineman. Dr. Fineman, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Scott. Very happy to be on your show again.
Yes, it's always good to have you back on. So let's start here at the top, Dr. Fineman. Last week, Joe Biden chooses his vice presidential candidate, Senator Kamala Harris. What'd you make of that?
Well, I thought she was one of the two finalists, along with Susan Rice. But the thing about Susan Rice is that she's never run for public office, so that was probably a disadvantage. I think Kamala, and it's Kama, by the way, not Kamala. We have to get used to that.
Now, why in the world do people get into that?
That's how she likes it to be pronounced.
Oh, does she? I'll have to talk to her about that.
Anyway, it's like a comma. All right, Kamala Harris has great background as Attorney General of California, which is the biggest state, 40 million people, one out of every 8 Americans. So it's the second most important Attorney General position to the U.S. Attorney General, who, of course, is appointed, not elected. And she was also District Attorney of San Francisco and has been a U.S. Senator. So she's got a lot of background in the city, state, and now the U.S. government. And she's a very warm person, has great empathy, has great sincerity, and in that regard, I think she and Joe Biden make a great team.
Now, a lot of people seem to feel she doesn't come off very warm and fuzzy. Why do you think that is?
I guess because she's been controversial in some of the things she did as DA in San Francisco and as Attorney General. Whenever you're in office, you've got to make some people angry. But actually, I think she's got great empathy and compassion and great emotion, and I like her laugh. She's got a great laugh, and I find her very appealing. And I do think, I've said this to Adam Lepp as well, that I think there's at least a good chance that at some point, maybe not in this next term if they win, but at some point Kamala Harris will be president of the United States.
Do you think Joe Biden, if he should win, would be a two-term president?
I would doubt it, but you know, it's hard to say. I would think that he will be able to finish his first term, or maybe he'll leave a little before to give his vice president an edge on the election. I think it all depends. I think both he and also Donald Trump, both are people who could be somehow not finishing the term for one reason or another, as I've written about. And I want to point out, I wrote on History News Network about the zero election year syndrome, where every zero election year, the president elected seven straight times from 1840 through 1960, died in office, and then in 1980, when Reagan was shot, and in 2000, George W. Bush was threatened many times, luckily not harmed, and now we're at 2020, so it's going to be interesting. As I said, if Donald Trump wins and survives to 2025 and leaves, which supposedly he would have to leave, or Joe Biden wins and stays to 2025 or 2029, if he finishes the term, whichever term it is, then we can say the zero election year syndrome has been overcome, but it is going to be an issue people will talk about.
You know, Dr. Fineman, Adam replayed an episode of his show a few weeks ago that you had done, and I remember one of the first times you had come on this show, you were talking about how you did not believe that President Trump would make it very far into his term. He certainly would not finish his first term. It looks like he is going to finish his first term. What do you think allowed that to happen?
Well, first I want to say it's true I said, but so did Alan Lichtman of American University and a number of other people, certainly more well-known than I am, so I'm not the only one who thought he would not finish. I think he was able to finish because his party refused to stand up to his abuse of power. They could have removed him on February 5th, and in fact, what's interesting is February 5th was the day he was found not guilty. You know, he was not convicted of impeachment. And the next day was the first reported case and death of a COVID-19. And I've always wondered if he had left on February 6th and President Pence was in and didn't have Trump on his rear end all the time, would he have done things differently on the pandemic? It's a question we'll never know.
What do you make of these matchups? Because we are going to see the debates here in about a month and a half. What do you see the Trump-Biden debate being like?
I think that Trump's going to be totally on the attack and trying to label him unfit. Already they're having ads about that. But I can say there's plenty of tape of Trump acting unfit mentally over the years. So I think that's not a good debate to get involved in. I think Biden, based on his past performances against Paul Ryan and Sarah Palin, will certainly be able to handle himself very well. And I do think that Kamala Harris will really win easily over Mike Pence. She's a tough person, a prosecutor. She is not someone you want to mess with. So I think, you know, particularly in her case, I think it'll be a win on her part. We'll see, though. It'll be something we should discuss in October, I guess, after it's occurred.
You know, it's interesting because everybody always talks about the Trump presidency, but Vice President Pence has been a part of this. Where do you score him in this presidency?
He's a collaborator with a lot of things that I don't think he agrees with, but he goes along with because he wants to be president someday. But I do think that he shows a lack of principle to realize that this person has been very dangerous over this period of time, has undermined every policy imaginable, domestic and foreign, and he should have pushed the cabinet majority to step in under the 25th Amendment. But he is not willing to do so. So he has sold his soul, as I would say, to Donald Trump. And I don't think he's going to look well in history.
When you look at the history of vice presidents, is there a vice president who you thought was really top-notch?
Oh, absolutely. Walter Mondale, under Jimmy Carter, set the standard for the modern vice presidency. And I think Joe Biden was an excellent vice president as well. Those two particularly, I think, do stand out. I think that Mondale is the greatest, and he's still around, by the way. Mondale is going to be in the 93, right before Inauguration Day. And just for a moment, I want to say today, Rosalynn Carter, the First Lady, is 93 years old, so we should salute her on that.
When we look back at the Carters, I think about this during Democratic Convention Week, because Jimmy Carter was president in the 70s through the early 80s. Why is it that the Democrats have never really fully embraced him? He's been invited to I think the last convention he did it by video. I haven't heard anything about him being at this year's convention or doing a video, and he certainly could. Why is Jimmy Carter why has he never been the elder statesman of the Democratic Party?
I think it's probably his personality. He tends to separate himself from other presidents. Like when President Obama came in, there was that photograph of the five presidents at the time, and he was off like on his own, separated from the others. They were close to each other, and, you know, Clinton, the Bushes, and Obama. I think it's probably his personality. I also think now, I think he will show up, I think, in a tape or in a live event, not, of course, in person, you know, as far as at any location, because he is going to be 96 on October 1st. So he's got to consider that, and with the COVID-19, he's got to be careful. But I think it's also because there was a fight within the Democratic Party between the Kennedy wing, the Ted Kennedy wing, and his wing, and they, of course, split in 1980, and because of that, I think, beyond everything else, Carter, you know, was not well-received, because he was seen as somehow a Southern conservative for a Democrat. He was, basically. Although he had progressive trends, but he was certainly more conservative than the modern Democratic Party of the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and early 70s. So I think he was never well-liked in that regard. But I think as an elder statesman, he has gained a lot of he has gained a lot of respect, and I think his rating in history, which is in the middle 20s, will go up once he passes. any president looks better or at least goes up a bit when they pass away, like Harry Truman was rated low until he passed away. And then suddenly he was seen as much better, and now he's in the top few. So I think Carter's just more of an outsider, but I think he's more respected. Even me, even myself, I wasn't thrilled by him. I voted for him, but I wasn't thrilled. In 1980, I was thinking of voting for John Anderson, the Illinois former Republican who was an independent, but I ended up voting for Carter. I didn't care for him that much, but I've come to respect and admire him over these, over what is now going to be 40 years since he left office, the longest retirement, and his wife's still around, and Walter Mondale's still around.
Kamala Harris, being the vice presidential candidate, do you think her being a woman will hurt? We certainly... Hillary says it hurt her being a woman. She said that in her book, What Happened, that there was still a lot of misogynism out there. Do you think that will play into the mix here?
I think misogyny is always going to be present, but I think it's going to bring more black women and minority women out, and they're the most loyal part of the Democratic coalition. And it's really clear that the majority of women prefer the Democrats, and I think there'll be more participation by minorities than there was for Hillary Clinton. If there had been more minorities voting, particularly women, in 2016 in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania with such small margins, only like 2 votes per precinct, I think it was, I think it's likely that she would have been elected.
What did you make last night, first night of the Democratic Convention? Our governor, former governor, Republican John Kasich, 2016 presidential candidate on the Republican side, did a little taped speech last night. What'd you make of that?
I thought it was very good, and I think John Kasich is very reputable, even though he's being attacked this morning, of course, by Fox News Channel and by Republicans. But to me, back in 16, I always said he was the best person to run. If I'd had a choice of who I wanted at that point, it would have been Joe versus John. I would have preferred Joe Biden over Hillary against John Kasich, and I would say either way, we would be in good shape. And I'm glad to see that he's done this. Plus, Christy Todd Whitman, the former governor of New Jersey, who also was EPA head under George W. Bush, also came out and spoke last night. And so does Susan Molinari, formerly a Republican House leader from New York, and also Meg Whitman, who ran for governor of California and is certainly conservative. These are not liberals, but they're people who see an ever-present threat with Donald Trump. And a lot of conservatives are feeling that way. And I just wrote this morning, in fact, about that. Republicans for Biden or not supporting Trump. And it's a long list of people that I list in this article this morning. And they are people who have a lot of good reputation, and they include conservative, indeed, commentators such as Bill Kristol and George Will. So we're talking about serious people, not extremes that are seen as, oh, they're not reputable. These are reputable people, plus the people who had been in government. So many, a long list, if you look at that article on, if you want, I can go over it, the people, but I just wrote about that this morning.
It's interesting because we did have this movement back in 2016 called Never Trumpers. I don't think any former past Republican president attended the 2016 Republican convention. Now, Kasich did not go to that convention either, but he did not endorse Hillary Clinton. I think he said he wrote John McCain in the blank on Election Day. What do you think has changed this time that would allow him not only to endorse the Democrat, but speak at the convention?
Well, because of the horror he feels about the record of Donald Trump in foreign and domestic policy. He's done such damage, and I've said this many times before, this is not a typical president. And again, it makes George W. Bush, who I have problems with, look a lot better, even on just a humane level, a decent human being, the way he treats people, and certainly makes even Richard Nixon look far better. And as I've joked, but I think it's true, the people at the bottom of the presidential list, like James Buchanan, Andrew Johnson, Warren G. Harding, and Franklin Pierce, all in heaven saluting and saying, thank God we're out of the basement.
Well, you know, the thing about the Kasich thing, interestingly enough to me, is that what I heard yesterday was, if you're a Democrat, you probably like it that he's doing it. If you're a Republican, you're probably saying it's sour grapes on his behalf that he's not the president and probably never will be, and it doesn't change anybody's mind.
I think it does change some people who voted for Trump and have seen this on the news who now will never vote for Trump. And I think seeing someone of reputation like Kasich or Christy Todd Whitman speaking up at the convention, and also these others I've mentioned who you read about them and you hear more about them in the campaign, including, interestingly, the husband of Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway is unbelievable, the leader of the Lincoln Project, George Conway. That is unbelievable. I don't know how they live in that household together.
Well, but I think he's disliked Trump since the beginning.
But his wife still works for him. So I'm just saying, what is their life like? I like to be a fly on the wall.
When we talk about last night, certainly somebody who gave a big, big speech in 2016 was former First Lady Michelle Obama. She gives a speech last night. What do you make of her speech?
I think she's wonderful. I think she's very good. And she's not a political type. She even says she doesn't like politics. There was rumors that she might have been Biden's running mate, but she obviously had no interest. But I think she is a classy, elegant lady, and I think she did a fantastic job. And I loved when she finished by saying the famous or infamous words of Trump about the pandemic, about the issues of having to get him out. It is what it is. I just love that, you know.
Do you think, here's the thing in this country, you have people who like Trump and you have people who dislike Trump. Is there really a whole lot in the middle anymore at this point, after 4 years of the Trump presidency?
No, unfortunately, we have no middle. I think we have an extremely divided country. And I think now, thank God we don't have a major war or anything like that, but other than the 1960s with the Vietnam War, we've never been as much divided since the Civil War, other than maybe the 1960s, and it's tragic. It really is sad.
I read an article yesterday, and it struck me because it has been so weird, and maybe it's the pandemic, and maybe it's the virtual conventions and all this, but I don't hear people talking about Biden at all. The people who are talking about presidential politics either say two things. They say, I like Trump, I want him back in office, or I don't like Trump, we've got to have something else. Biden's name really doesn't come up, and it's almost as if he doesn't exist. It's almost this election is, do you like Trump or do you not like Trump? And then last night, one of the delegates at the Democratic convention, when asked why should Joe Biden be president, said, well, he's not Trump.
Well, I think it's because Joe Biden does not stir passion like, say, Bernie Sanders did. But I think Joe Biden is the best person to bring the country together. He knows how to cross the aisle. He's worked with Republicans before. Even when he was vice president, there were troubles where Mitch McConnell would not deal with, with President Obama. But often Joe Biden got in the middle there and helped out. And I think he is the one person who can bring the country, not everybody, but can bring, I think, some crossing the aisle and some unity. Although it's not going to be easy. He has, if he wins, a massive set of problems. I think they're the greatest since the Great Depression, actually, as far as, and it's not just the idea of the second Great Depression, which I think we're in, it's also this pandemic, which goes back to Woodrow Wilson's time, and also the racial tensions that have always been there, improved by the Civil Rights Movement, but obviously still a lot of work to do. So he's got a major series of issues. He has to have a good cabinet. I think he will. He'll have good advisors, and Harris will be very much a very active vice president and very supportive.
But what do you think it is about Joe Biden? Is it the pandemic that people just aren't talking about him? Certainly in 2016, you either loved or you hated Hillary, or you loved or you hated Donald. It doesn't seem like I've never seen a presidential election quite like this, where it's all about the president. Everybody knows Trump, everybody knows what he's done, and it's led people to either love him or hate him. And even when we had Professor Alan Lichtman on, you talked about Professor Lichtman, we had him on last Monday, I believe it was, and I said to him when he picked Joe Biden to win, I said, does it really matter who if Hillary were the Democrat this time, would you pick her to win? And he said, yes. He said the Democrat is irrelevant in this race. It's all about Donald Trump.
Well, I must say I respect Alan Lichtman, but I would not agree because Hillary, for some reason, has so many people just hate her. I've met people who say she's crooked, and I said, based on what? It's never been proved. She defended herself well. well, look at the person in office. I don't think so. And Bernie Sanders, I know I've had students who say, only Bernie. And I said, Bernie, you know, even though now Biden's being attacked about that he's losing his mind, which I do not think he is any more than Trump. I think Trump's a lot more dangerous. But I think Bernie would be called a socialist, a Marxist, a communist, all kinds of crazy terms. And I just think, although he doesn't get a lot of personal attention, Biden, maybe that's the right thing now, because, you know, this way we don't have people hating him like they hate Bernie or hate Hillary. So I think that's a positive.
You know, in 2008, I remember when Obama was elected, because the economy was in such shambles and George W. Bush's approval rating was in the 30s, it was almost thought that whoever the Democrat is going to win this election and win it handily, and that was true, they did. Are we almost in that situation this time?
Yes, if you could have me on a later show, closer to the election, I predicted a massive victory for Joe Biden, and I said it back in May, and I do not change what I said. So in another show, I can go into detail what I mean. I think, obviously, it's not going to be like Ronald Reagan winning all but one state or Richard Nixon. It's not going to be that good. But I don't see President Trump winning more than 16 to 18 states. And definitely, I think Joe Biden will win 32 to 34 states. And some of them will be close, but many will not be. And I think the states that Hillary lost, I don't think they're going to be close. I really don't think so. There's been a big turnaround in those states, and so I see it, and I don't think there's going to be... I mean, it might be contested, but it's not going to be, I think, that close as people would imagine.
Of course,
anything could happen in the next, 77 days. You never know for sure. And there could be the so-called October surprise, as always is talked about. And the debates, obviously, will matter, so... You know, again, there's always subject to change. I may change my estimate, but I'll be glad to discuss that in October when we get closer.
How will the pandemic affect this election?
Well, I think it's making more people want to vote by mail, and they should be entitled. I vote by mail even before this, and the president votes by mail, and he seems to have no trouble with Florida voting by mail, but he has problems with other states. It's so ridiculous. But I think there'll be more people voting by mail, and I think... there'll be fewer people willing to go out and stand in the line to vote, and I hope hopefully there'll be a lot of early voting as well. And, you know, I don't think it's going to lead to fewer people voting, though. I think we're going to have a record turnout, but it's going to be primarily by mail.
What do you make of the whole thing going on with the post office right now? There are going to be hearings.
It's illegal what's going on. It's unconstitutional. It's against the Constitution, and I think the Postmaster General appointee is in real deep legal trouble, and he's backing off a little bit already. And I think it's making people think that the president's trying to steal the election. And he has already made the statement even yesterday in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, about maybe having a third or fourth term, and laughs about it. There's no such thing. The Constitution does not allow it since the 22nd Amendment. Only Franklin D. Roosevelt had more. That was legal. It is no longer legal. And, of course, there are people concerned that he will not leave on January 20th, but he will leave. And if for some reason there's no conclusion as to who has won, which I don't think will be the case, then under the Constitution, the Speaker of the House, who probably will be Nancy Pelosi, will take over as president short term, not for the whole term. So, I mean, he's going to have to leave if he's not the winner. There's no way around it. And if it becomes a horrible public scene of embarrassment, it'll happen, but it has to be that way. We are a republic, and we are a country that believes in freedom and liberty, and we're not going to allow a president to outlive his welcome.
Something else Professor Lichtman said when he was on last Monday, which I found interesting, was he said if he was making this prediction in 2019, up until late 2019, he would have predicted Trump, that his key system that has predicted every president since 1984 would have predicted Trump. It's the bad economy because of the COVID and the racial unrest.
Yes.
I
agree with him on that.
So if the pandemic had not happened, you believe President Trump would be reelected?
Well, the impeachment issue, though, still comes into play. I guess he didn't mention it. I still think that was something, although he ended up, quote, winning, end quote. I don't think that helped. But, I mean, certainly if he had handled the pandemic better, if he had taken real serious action and believed science and medicine, I do think it would have been better. And if we had been shut down completely for a longer period than we were, which was never really complete, I think we would be far better off now with all the schools having problems, universities. I myself am teaching a class online, first time I've ever done it, at Florida Atlantic University on the American presidency, and it's going to be new, but I wouldn't want to go to campus, and luckily Florida Atlantic University, most classes are going to be online, and we've seen at UNC, Chapel Hill, they opened up, and now they have to shut down after a week, so a lot of this, I'm not saying it would not have been there, but it would have been far less if the president had not played games and had been serious since February, but he has not been.
Mm. Let's say Joe Biden wins. He takes office in January of 2021. What can he do with the current COVID situation that the current president has not done?
Well, he has already talked about the need for a mask policy, mandatory. Now, of course, mandatory doesn't mean everybody's going to do it, but he's called for a mask policy because masks will make a difference. And I think that there will be, all kinds of planning through his cabinet and other agencies, including the Centers for Disease Control, to do whatever needs to be done. And I don't know all the answers myself. So it's going to be a year into the pandemic, but the need to really crack down and start to move toward hopefully overcoming it and lowering the amount of people who are going to be infected. But it's not easy after a year when you've had everything, the cows out of the barn, that you're going to get them back in, as they say. It's a major problem, and it's going to require statesmanship. And I do believe Joe has the ability to do that with the help of Harris and good cabinet members and advisors. Everything is who you have around you. After all, no president does it all by himself. He needs good people around him.
What do you make of the virtual convention? Certainly when there's a presidential convention, there's a lot more press and a lot more interest. This year, not as big as it has been.
Well, actually, I found it interesting last night. I'll be watching the Republican convention, too. I see some people on Facebook say, maybe this is a better way because so much money is wasted and so much of it is showmanship, which is nice. But maybe in the future, we will not have the big conventions that we've had all along. I mean, who says we have to do things always the same? I think it's going to get better. I mean, the first night is the beginning, but we're going to have Dr. Jill Biden tonight, and that'll be interesting. She'll be, I think, if he wins, a great first lady, and she's a college professor like I am, so I'm very happy about that. And then, of course, Kamala Harris speaking, and then Joe Biden and many others, and including President Obama. And I think, we're warming up, and I think even next week, the Republican convention will certainly be interesting. I don't know how they're going to run it, but it will be interesting, too. So I think, for political junkies, it won't matter. For the average American, it might, but a lot of average Americans tune out the conventions anyway. They don't watch it. Not everybody is like you and I are.
What did you make of Bernie Sanders last night?
I thought, I'm not a Bernie Sanders fan as far as wanting him to be the president, so I'm glad he's not. I think it was a speech that seems reasonable considering the circumstances. Obviously, if Joe Biden wins, Bernie's going to push him to try to move him to the left. And, of course, John Kasich says he doesn't think Biden's going to move to the far left. I would tend to agree. I don't think he will either. He'll stay in the center left. But it's, look, let's face it, once he wins, if he does win, some of the people who are Republicans or conservatives backing him will find fault with him because he won't do what they want, and some liberals like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez probably would not like. Let's face it, a new president will always have critics, and that's part of politics, but I think he will play in the centrist lane, but a little to the left, and I think that's what will be the best way to go.
What is... If you were trying to explain the Democratic Party to somebody right now, how would you explain it? Is it more liberal?
Well, back in the time of Will Rogers, when he said it's a group, I forgot the exact term right now, but he always talked about it's not an organized group. It's true, we have all kinds of factions in the Democratic Party. We have the far left, we have the moderate left, we have the centrist, and we have those who are more conservative. But actually, the Republican Party also has that. It's just now we have really very few moderate centrists in the Republican Party, a lot of very conservative right wing, and then we have the crazies, as I call it, and that includes this new wing, the QAnon group, led by this future Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, who believes in conspiracy theories and, all kinds of crazy things, and I think it alarms people like House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, who's keeping quiet, but he didn't want her in there, and I don't think any responsible Republican would want her. But I think it's going to create troubles, and I think one of her backers is, unfortunately, at least in my mind, your congressman in the area, Jim Jordan, who I think is a nightmare, and of course, I'm sure people listening will love him, but I think he's horrible. But I think, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to be noticed on the national level, just like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on the other side is noticed. It'll make for entertainment for sure.
Florida and Ohio will be very interesting during this upcoming election. How do you think they'll go?
I think Florida will definitely go indeed Democratic. It wasn't that big a margin that he had about Trump, about 200,000. And there's also a new group, the people in Florida that are people from the West Indies and from Haiti, the kind of background and area, Jamaica, where indeed, of course, the father of Harris comes from. I read somewhere there's not a small number of those people, and they may not have ever wanted to vote, but now they'll come out. And I think also people who are Puerto Ricans, who are citizens automatically, and after the horrible way that Trump dealt with the troubles in Puerto Rico, I think their numbers, particularly in Central Florida, which is the I-4 corridor, which is the area that decides the election, I think more and more of those people, plus elsewhere in the state who are Puerto Rican, are going to vote. I think Florida is going to go to him. And that probably is the whole ball game, because it has, after all, the third highest number of electoral votes. Now, Ohio has less influence. Ohio, I do predict, will go to Biden, but not as sure that it will, but I really do think Ohio will. But it'll be more of a battle in Ohio, and it is possible Ohio will not be won. But it's not necessary to win all the Midwest if you win Florida, and now there's a chance he could win Georgia and Texas and Arizona. So while it's nice to win it all, he's got lots of areas, I'm talking about Joe Biden, that he can win in. And meanwhile, the swing states, at least in polls right now, Trump is way behind. So yes, it could be wrong, and things could change, I know, in 11 weeks. But right now, he's running scared, and that's why he's involved with this postal conspiracy, as I see it.
What do you make in the idea that Trump says he'll look into a pardon for Edward Snowden?
Well, I do not support that, personally, and I've upset some people who say, you're a progressive, and look, I'm a progressive, but I'm a pragmatic progressive. I do not think Snowden should get a pardon. I don't like a lot of the things he's done with pardoning people anywhere, like Joe Arpaio, who I'm glad lost that last race for sheriff, in Phoenix, in Maricopa County. He's a horrible, oh my God, horrible person. He's finally done. But, I mean, the president can use the pardon power unless there's a way to, I don't think there is a way, to limit it. And look, other presidents have pardoned people at times where you have to say, really? Like Bill Clinton a couple of times, including his own brother. I don't think that should have been allowed. I'm not in favor of it, but he might do that, yes.
Remind people what Edward Snowden did.
He was involved in getting secrets of the intelligence agencies and the State Department and spreading it. And, of course, some people say, well, it's good because we should know what our government's doing. Yes and no. I mean, of course we should know. But, honestly, a lot of things we cannot know. But these are the kind of people who would attack Truman, way back Truman in the Cold War. And I have people on my blog who say this. They say, oh, foreign policy has been a disaster and all that. Therefore, he's a hero for having exposed these intelligence agencies. At the same time, President Trump has attacked the intelligence agencies, which are the ones that, although they're not perfect, of course not, if it wasn't for them, we would never be as safe as we are. And, of course, they have, and we have learned about Putin's involvement in the 2016 election, and that's why he's gone after the intelligence agencies and fired people like Dan Coats, trying to tell the truth about things. And now Dan Coats, who is the director of national intelligence, a former senator, has come out against Trump. So, and anybody who's responsible and sensible would be. And I don't think Snowden deserves any kind of a pardon. Let him stay where he is.
An interesting story out this morning, speaking of pardons, President Donald J. Trump said he will pardon Susan B. Anthony, a leader in the women's suffrage movement who was arrested for voting in 1872 in violation of laws permitting only men to vote.
What is that going to do?
I haven't
seen that. Oh, my gosh. He's trying to win the women's vote by doing that?
By the way,
I think it's very funny. I guess you could do a posthumous pardon. It's true, but I don't believe that. But she might have spent some time. I have to look it up. I can go outside now if she spent some time in jail, but I don't think it affected her. She still led the women's suffrage movement. And by the way, today is the anniversary of the women's suffrage amendment, 100 years ago, centennial. And this is the election on November 2nd, this in 1920, the election of Warren G. Harding, who your station is named after, and the city where he lived is, of course, Marion. It is the first election that women could participate in. And I, of course, salute that fact. Because there were many who did not want women the right to vote, and there are women out there and men out there now who would say, take away the right to vote for women. Ann Coulter, C-O-U-L-T-E-R, who's outrageous, has said we should get rid of the 19th Amendment and the 17th Amendment, the U.S. Senate, elected by popular vote, which is absolutely crazy.
When we look toward Wednesday night, tomorrow night at the Democratic Convention, the lineup's kind of interesting because you do have Kamala Harris receiving the nomination, but two of the speakers that night certainly were planned, Elizabeth Warren, Hillary Clinton. What do you make of that?
Well, actually, maybe it should be tonight, but tomorrow, you guys, to celebrate women's suffrage, maybe. It makes sense that Hillary Clinton would speak, and it also makes sense, Bill Clinton's going to speak tonight, I think, and also Elizabeth Warren, but I think it is a salute to women who have made a difference, because all three of them have made a difference in their own ways.
Do you think people know what changes will happen whoever's elected president? This is a weird election in that, does platform really matter at this point? We are, you know, 80-something days from the election at this point. Why is nobody really talking about what they're going to do? If they are, we're not hearing about it.
Well, because until the new term begins, we will not know the extent of the pandemic. I think it's going to be really bad, but we, you know, things could change rapidly. Just like Franklin D. Roosevelt came in 1933, and he had been criticizing Herbert Hoover for not having a balanced budget, and that's hilarious because he goes ahead and has an unbalanced budget because of the Depression. So a lot of it is, as things occur, you figure out what to do. And the actual platform is usually just a set of goals. It is very seldom that a lot of it gets done in the next 4 years, and it depends on circumstances, like in foreign affairs. We cannot know what's going to happen with Russia or China or Iran or Saudi Arabia or North Korea. There's no way to know, but certainly we're not going to be embracing authoritarians as Donald Trump has.
But usually, even if they don't get it done, the people running for president have some kind of idea. Well, for a long time, we heard repeal and replace Obamacare. With Obama, we heard we need national health care. With George W. Bush, we heard privately invest some of your Social Security. Well, it's the economy, stupid, with Bill Clinton. What is the big push this time? What's the platform?
Well, I think the platform is to deal with the pandemic, although nobody knows how we're going to deal with it, resolve the issue of people who are unemployed and homeless and nothing being done about it at this point. It's horrific what's going on. We've got more homeless people and more people unemployed, and already more unemployed than we've ever had. And I think we're going to have major government action, and that means conservatives probably will turn against Biden and Harris, because we're going to have big, liberal, progressive government, and there's no alternative, at least not in 2021. Maybe after things will tone down, but you know, definitely this is a move against conservatism since Ronald Reagan, because it's just not going to work now.
Who's going to be, in your opinion, in this Biden cabinet? Is this going to be throwbacks to the Obama administration? Is this going to be people who've been in the party for a long time? Or is this going to be the new bunch, the new breed?
I think it'll be a mix. I do think that some of the presidential contenders will certainly be considered for positions. I do think, for instance, Pete Buttigieg, I think I could see in the cabinet possibly as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, because he was mayor, of course, he has a history as mayor. You know, again, we have to consider about taking people out of the Senate. The people who are in the Senate, you have to think about it. Like, if we were to take Elizabeth Warren out, then her seat would be open, and a Republican governor, although he is critical of Trump, is still a Republican governor. Charlie Baker would probably pick a Republican, at least temporarily, So that could be a real problem with the Senate. So I don't think, it depends on the balance of the Senate, I guess, but I'm not sure she would be picked. But Amy Klobuchar, Minnesota is Democratic. If she was to end up like maybe Attorney General, almost certainly Minnesota, the governor, and then by election would pick a Democrat. And so I think Amy Klobuchar would be in the cabinet. I do think one Republican, as I wrote the other day, is always picked by a Democratic president, and usually the Secretary of Defense. Doesn't guarantee. So my thought is it could be John Kasich or John Huntsman as Secretary of Defense.
There are good, sane-minded people who go to the polls and vote for Donald Trump. What is that fanaticism that he has? That he's their guy. We see it right now. We see the hats again, the masks that people wear. Some people have Trump 2020 on their masks. He sells merchandise. Unlike any other presidential candidate I've ever seen, what is it about him? And I think that's why people are afraid of the underlying vote, the silent vote that they talk about. What is it about Donald Trump that inspires people?
I think he brings out the worst side of people. Unfortunately, people are not all people in general. We're not all nice and fuzzy. Many people really are very, very, very narrow-minded, unfortunately, intolerant. It's almost like a cult. Some people have compared it to Jim Jones in Guyana. I think in some ways that is the case. There'll be people who will come out after he loses, if he does, who probably will commit some violence, God forbid. But I also think for those who are well-to-do who vote for him, it's all about money. As if you're going to take all your money with you. Like, how much is ever enough? And so I think the wealthy are thinking about money and taxes, but many people, not saying majority, but there are people who really don't like women being, you know, modern women. They want the 1950s women. They don't like minority groups. They don't like gays and lesbians. And, you know, and so they back him because he promotes all of the misogyny, racism, nativism, and elements of anti-Semitism, although his own family has Jews in it, but he backs the white supremacists of Charlottesville, and that brings out people like Richard Spencer and David Duke, people like that, not just them. So there's an ugly element out there, but I really think it's not going to affect, I think it's going to have an effect, but it's not going to decide the election.
Have you been surprised at how much Joe Biden's age and mental state have been in the forefront of this campaign?
Well, yes, but you know, but like I understand now, just today, the Trump team is putting out all the flubs he's made. Yes, he's made flubs, but I'll tell you, there's plenty of stuff that Trump has said that are flubs, and that's going to be put out in opposition. I say most of his flubs, Joe Biden's, are funny and just mishaps, and you laugh at it. It's not a big deal. But with Trump, it's scary with the kind of flubs, or not flubs, or the kind of things he says. Yes, it is an issue because of his age. I think it also could affect senior citizens who don't necessarily, and I'm a senior citizen technically. I think a lot of senior citizens are not going to like this going on. He could actually be hurting his senior citizen support. That's one of the few areas in which he does seem to have the backing. I don't know why, but because he's threatening Social Security and Medicare in the future. And he's made it clear he wants to make it privatized like George W. Bush wanted to do, and that failed miserably. But I do think that it's a disgrace that that's going on, and I think Joe Biden will do fine. He'll have his mishaps. We all do, and every president's had it, but I still think he's perfectly mentally capable. And if he wasn't, if it ever reaches a stage where that is the case, I really believe, people say, no, I don't believe it, but they would say to me, I would say, his wife would say, Joe, you can't handle this anymore. You need to resign. After all, we did have Nixon resign. Woodrow Wilson considered resigning if he had lost the 1916 election, resigned early. There was some who thought Reagan might have resigned in the last 2 years. He was starting to decline, but he didn't. But I think if he was seen, including by his own wife, as a danger because he doesn't have his mind together, I think that certainly it would lead to his leaving, and it would not be forced on him. But I think Joe Biden would have a lot to do with this. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be just fine. Maybe not a second term. We'll have to see. But you know, you look at Maxine Waters, 82. She's doing fine. So is Nancy Pelosi. I know they're women, but they're doing fine. And yet they make flubs sometimes, but it doesn't mean they're not mentally capable and they're not threatening or dangerous, any of those people.
Dr. Feinman, with 30 seconds left, here we are in 2020. Does it surprise you that the two candidates are white guys in their 70s? And either way, we're going to elect the oldest president ever.
Yes, because Trump would be the oldest inaugurated president, older than Reagan's second term, and of course, Biden would be older than anybody when he comes in. He'll be 78 2 weeks after the election. I want to thank you very much for having invited me, and I look forward to speaking to you again before the election.
All right. Dr. Ron Feynman, you can catch him most Monday mornings on Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam Lipp, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. on this station. Thank you, Dr. Feynman.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And for this day, I'm heading for the dugout.
To the First Lady of Stand-Up Comedy, Phyllis Diller.
But it was kind of interesting because Phyllis Diller kind of always played on this, hey, I'm ugly.
Well, baby, let me put it like this.